It's Jim, it's the World of Bonds. It's Friday, the 6th of October, 2023. This is for professional investors only, never ever investment advice. Good morning to all of you. Good morning also to the scaffolders who have arrived to scaffold next door's house. So if you hear something, turn up the sweet hip-hop music in the background, which people already complain about being overbearing, but you should turn it up a bit more. Morning, scaffolders. Anyway, there's at least a small lull in the fighting as the government bond price collapse slowed down a little bit yesterday, but we're still left with 10-year US Treasury yields at 4.74%, which is just 6 basis points below their highest level since before the global financial crisis, and real yields are up at 2.5%, which is a new high for the cycle. So although this has been a real yield-driven sell-off rather than inflation fears, led sell-off. We have had some welcome news over the past couple of days, with oil prices started to fall sharply this week, lessening the worry that inflation will become another addition to the sell-off in bond markets and a renewed source of volatility. So the oil price fall that we're seeing now is really about the fact that US oil stockpiles have gone up. You know, there were fears that their kind of strategic reserve and things like that were running dry, and that the Russian and Saudi Arabian squeeze on supply was going to be quite severe. But it looks like the US has managed to rebuild those stockpiles nicely. And so we're seeing WTI, kind of US measure of oil prices, that price is down from about $94 per barrel to $82.50 per barrel in the space of a few trading sessions. I was thinking about this oil price in the context of the next UK general election. Obviously, Rishi Sunak, just finishing off the Conservative Party conference in Manchester. Labour start theirs in Liverpool, I think, over the next couple of days. So Rishi has got until January 2025, I think, legally, to hold the general election. Those, you know, American listeners, we don't have a fixed term. There's a bit of flexibility for the incumbent to decide when the election is. But there is a deadline of January 2025. And by the look of it, he wants to go as late as possible on that, in the hope, I guess, that something turns up that will give him a boost in the opinion polls. It's pretty poor outlook at the moment for the Conservative Party. As it stands, therefore, you know, probably as late as possible, because I think there is something he needs to consider, though, that at the moment he's more likely than not to hit his relatively soft pledge, his bet of hitting or halving inflation from about 10% where it was earlier this year to about 5% year on year by the end of 2023. So halving of inflation is, as I say, a fairly safe bet because oil prices were so high during 2022. So think about the base effects. So from 2021 to 2022, oil prices doubled. So they peaked at $94.34 per barrel on that WTI method in June 2022. So in order to get inflation up, back up at, you know, for oil prices where it was in 2023, oil prices would have had to have gone up to $180 a barrel to keep that same rate of oil price energy inflation within the inflation basket. So it was a fairly safe bet to make. The problem he faces now, though, is that oil prices have gone up a lot since the middle of this year. So if oil prices stayed at today's rate of $82.50 per barrel, that would be above almost every reading so far in 2023. So as we, you know, we go into 2024 at the highs of 2023, that means that the base effects, having been very helpful for him, become a big headwind in 2024. So if oil prices stayed at the year's high of $95 a barrel, then the year-on-year oil price inflation in the summer of 2024 would be about 40%. So a late election, you know, if he does decide to go late in the autumn of next year or even in January 2025, that would be quite a rare thing. People don't like politicians campaigning over their Christmas dinners, but you know, it could be as late as that. But late in the year, even if the core rate of inflation is continuing to come down in a positive way, we could see a resurgence in that headline rate of UK CPI. Remember too that the general economy is likely to be relatively weak at that point, because we will have seen pretty much everyone who's got a mortgage have their mortgage rate refix and be experiencing, you know, at least a few months of much, much higher mortgage rates on their household income. So that feed through will have hit most mortgage householders if they do decide to go at the latest possible date. Having seen the opinion polls though at the moment, and last night Labour won handsomely in the Scottish by-election that they fought last night, an early election also doesn't look likely, so it doesn't look to be much fun if the Tories went at the moment. So as I say, maybe something will turn up for them, as it did, I guess, for Margaret Thatcher with the Falklands War, where it looked like she was odds on to lose that general election, but then, you know, events. Meanwhile, the Halifax put out their latest house price data last night. So prices are down again, 6 months in a row of falling prices year on year. Not quite minus 5%, minus 4.7%, with the southeast of England the worst performer, with prices down there nearly 6%. And to quote the Halifax, we expect further falls over the next 6 months. Now, today we have non-farm payrolls, the most watched economic statistic out there. Last month, the US created 187,000 new jobs. They're now expected to be, for the last month, about 170,000 new jobs created. And the unemployment rate is expected to be around 3.7%. I guess the good news is we are going to get this data. There was a risk that with the government shutdown, that was narrowly averted and led to, I guess, a Tea Party rebellion that kicked out the Republican Speaker as well. There was a chance we didn't get any economic statistics for the foreseeable future. But we are going to get these, and expected to be relatively stable from where we were last month. The data haven't really rolled over at all to any great extent, you know, especially given 500 basis points worth of rate hikes. I'm going to be lazy now and really look at the UBS reasoning for high US Treasury yields, and kind of what they've put out is a list of some of the short-term data that is looking really robust. I'll come on to some of the more structural things very quickly to end, again, being lazy and quoting someone else. But here's UBS's economic roundup of the things that might explain why US Treasuries aren't petrified about recession and interest rate cuts and all of those sorts of things. So what have we had recently? ISM services in August, higher, big jump in the employment index in the ISM, weekly jobless claims trending lower, core retail sales going up, house prices stabilising and now rising, durable goods orders, which are capital goods, advancing, personal income and spending up, ISM manufacturing improved with orders improving, and jobs openings surged, and they think there's going to be a reasonably strong number today as well for non-farm payroll. So they're pointing to the short-term data all being a lot better than expected. Torsten Slok, who I quote a lot, Apollo economist, is talking about the rise in real yields, so forgetting about the short-term data, what's going on more structurally. And here are his six reasons why we're seeing the term premium, those real yields, and the you know, we're seeing effectively real yields up at 2.5%, having been down below 1.5%. His explanations are around the US sovereign downgrade, you know, the fact that we are seeing credit risk come back into thinking about the US government, especially with the political situation as it is that we just talked about. Secondly, Japan exiting yield curve control, and some decent Japanese wage inflation numbers coming through. So fundamentally, Japan's on the rise. Its bond yields are rising. So 10-year Japan up today above 80 basis points. So, and those 30-year Japanese government bonds up at 1.8% yesterday. So, you know, we are seeing a big rise in Japanese bond yields compared to what we've been used to. And that's before we've seen a full exit from yield curve control and before we've seen rate rises there. Next up, Fed quantitative tightening, so the move away from QE and towards QT. Fourth, China, and you know, the weak Chinese economy, falling exports means that China's not buying US treasuries like it used to in the olden days, and in fact China's holdings of US treasuries have reduced. Mainly that appears to be about the fall in US treasury bond prices rather than active selling, but nevertheless the flows bit, they're not buying as many treasuries because they don't have the money to do so anymore. Number five, the US budget deficit. So kind of linked a bit to the sovereign downgrade, as is number six, which is the large refinancing issue, with about a third of the US bond market and treasury bill market needing to be refinanced over the next year. And the treasury has announced that it'll be increasing its auction sizes. So just simply absorbing stuff is going to be more difficult. So those are a few of the reasons. So you can choose a million and one reasons why the treasury bond sell-off is happening, despite a relatively positive inflationary outlook at the moment, especially if oil prices are starting to go. As I say, it's not been about inflation, it's been about the other stuff. Have a good weekends. Bye.